Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Tuesday, March 30th. Before we begin, will you please call roll?
Representative Levy. She's excused.
Let's wait a minute and come back to Rep. Levy.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith. Representative, Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. And I believe that Representative Levy and Representative Smith will be joining us soon. They are both excused at this time. We have one item on our agenda for today. It's a public hearing. I'm opening the public hearing on House Bill 3328.
I'm here. Sorry, I'm late.
Welcome, Representative Levy.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And House Bill 3328, we do have a dash two amendment. So I'll just go ahead and explain the introduced version and the dash two as well. And you can really think of this bill almost in two policy pieces. So what 3328 is doing is it's the first piece would be creating an additional personal income tax equal to 0.0013 that gets multiplied against a taxpayer's taxable income. So it's a new tax, and it adjusts this tax rate annually for inflation going forward. The proceeds of the new income tax are directed to the State Wildlife Fund, with additional sub of the amount directed to the State Wildlife Fund. Additionally, there would be $500,000 per biennium directed to the Office of Outdoor Recreation. And then the Dash 2 amendment adds in an additional $1 million per biennium of the new income tax revenue to be transferred to the Oregon Conservation and Recreation Fund. So this new tax would be applicable to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2022. And the second piece of the bill relates to creating a credit, a personal income tax credit, equal to the purchase price of a license tag or permit that's issued pursuant to the wildlife laws. And so the credit applicability would be tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2022, and before January 1st, 2028.
Thank you. Committee, are there any questions or points to clarify with LRO before we open the hearing to the witness list? I'm not seeing any hands go up. We're ready to hear from the witnesses. We have two legislators with us this afternoon, and we'll call on those first. Representative David Brock Smith, and that will be followed by Representative Ken Helm. Rep. Brock Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair, colleagues. For the record, State Representative David Brock Smith, House District 1, which encompasses everything from Charleston around Coos Bay over to West Roseburg, down West I-5 to West Cape Junction, and then back over to the beautiful southern Oregon coast and Brookings Harbor, and all of the wonderful communities and natural resources in between. I bring you here today, a Republican in the Oregon State Legislature, a new income tax on Oregonians. And the reason why I bring you a new income tax on Oregonians today, Madam Chair and colleagues, is because the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is one critical agency for the state, and the data and science needed for the opportunity and recommendations for the management of this body and the Wildlife Commission is critical and underfunded. Currently, there's roughly 60% of the department is non-consumptive, but the burden to pay for that department falls on the hunting and fishing licenses and those that purchase them in this state. The department has a broad scope, and you'll hear that from testimony from the department later in the work that they do. And their resources that come from the general fund are scarce. Madam Chair, I just want to add that by pulling them out of the general fund and funding them solely with this new tax, it will open up roughly just shy of $90 million of current general fund per biennium to be used for education or anything this body sees fit. Madam Chair, I would direct you to the testimony or the submitted testimony that goes with regards to the budget background for ODF&W, which clearly outlines where the resources come from in regards to funding the agency. I would also direct you to the ODF&W funding options in the submitted testimony, colleagues, because this is the nuts and bolts of what this bill does and what it funds. This would fully fund the department in perpetuity, as well as fully fund the Oregon State Police arm that's in the that's currently in the general fund as well, and pull them out of the general fund and fund with these dollars with regards to OSP enforcement and fish and game enforcement. It funds the implementation of programs for conservation efforts, including conservation programs and strategies identified in the Oregon Conservation Strategy and Nearshore Strategy Plan. It funds the science research and monitoring and inventories of species and habitat to fill data gaps. It funds investments in data management, analysis, and distribution, as well as efforts to restore ecosystems to resiliency. It funds the expand the enforcement of laws to protect and conserve natural resources, as well as conservation partnerships, and dedicates a portion of new alternative funds for grants for on-the-ground conservation projects. It also works to implement programs to improve fishing and hunting and increase participation by reducing reliance on biennial license fee increases, targets the use of new funding to improve hunting and fishing opportunities and market those opportunities. It develops specific programs to provide additional fishing opportunities for urban and underserved communities, such as expanded fish stocking, secures additional and improve existing public fishing and hunting access and supportive infrastructure, expands and improves research, monitoring, and management of both game and non-game species. It expands collaborative efforts to improve and restore fish and wildlife habitat. It expands the enforcement of fish and wildlife regulations, focusing on areas that limit with limited enforcement presence. It also implements the statewide conservation education and outreach campaign that expands and improves current communication and public outreach programs, focusing on underrepresented communities in urban areas. It develops additional wildlife viewing opportunities and facilities. It assesses what communications and outreach efforts are better conducted by private and nonprofit entities rather than by the department. It expands and develops new conservation education programs. It develops a more comprehensive social media strategy that includes communication with broader audience through the latest technologies. that expands localized outreach efforts such as staff presence in public events, providing content in multiple languages and partnerships to encourage participation. And it builds an internal culture and capacity to improve connections to diverse and underserved communities through a strong human resources program. It also deals with the huge toll of deferred maintenance and adopt a biennial bonding approach to address deferred infrastructure needs. It also deals with funding options within ODF&W's current general funded programs and OSP, as I mentioned earlier, OSP funding basis. With regards to the Fish Division and Inland Fisheries, it provides leadership, planning, management, and direction on field fish programs, implementing the wildlife and food fish policies under ORS 496012 and 506109. It implements the wildlife and food fish management policies at the field level of inland fisheries management, including implementation of recreation angling plans, applicable recovery plans, and the Oregon plan and other local plans. It conducts field monitoring and research on Oregon's native salmon and steelhead and their habitats. Data derived from this program are used to evaluate populations and habitat and manage recreational and commercial fisheries and hatchery programs that are so essential for our state. It implements state conservation and federal recovery plans for Andromedas salmon and steelhead, which again are critically important for our state. It deals with water and energy coordination as well. It also will be a primary source of studies and recommendations for the state and ODF&W regarding aquatic habitat needs for fish and wildlife. It provides policy guidance to the hatchery operations. Hatchery facilities are responsible for rearing and releasing about 45 million salmon and trout into state waters. It helps monitor hatchery fish production for fish pathogens and conducts fish marketing and identification. It provides architecture engineering services for the agency and all of the agency's water rights reporting. Restore and maintain fish populations by protecting them from entrainment into water diversions and providing fish passage to habitat areas for all life cycle needs. It deals with the Marine and Columbia River fisheries as well, and developing fishery policies, public engagement and regulations, and in the season management and in-season management of marine finfish fisheries. It's developed an implementation of the Oregon Nearshore Strategy, review permits and ocean estuary development actions, and provide recommendations to the permitting agency with regards to natural resource impacts. Provides policy and on-the-ground actions to manage marine mammals for the purposes of reducing predation on critically threatened and endangered fish stocks, and provides data analysis and professional expertise to the regional implementation of the Federal Marine Mammal Protection Act and Endangered Species Act. It helps develop management and recommendations for the best use of Oregon salmon resources and evaluate proposed Columbia River salmon fishery regulations. It helps monitor ocean commercial and recreational salmon fisheries and conduct ocean and coastal river investigations. Within the Wildlife Division, it helps implement the wildlife policies under ORS 496012 at the field level and game management level, including implementation of Wildlife Division policies, damage, inventory, harvest, and disease programs at the field levels. It helps contribute to the Predatory Animal, Rabbit, and Rodent Control Fund as part of the overall cost share with USDA Wildlife Services and participating Oregon counties to assist with controlling agricultural damage caused by predatory animals, develops and implements complex management strategies to address the potential impacts of avian predators on salmonids in the lower Columbia River and along the Oregon coast. It helps provide oversight and policy development and implementation of the agency's wildlife programs, provides leadership, planning, and management and direction for the field wildlife programs, implementing the wildlife and food fish policies. It helps coordinate with other agencies to address land and water uses issues associated with fish, wildlife, and their habitats. With regards to conservation, it helps develop and revise, implement, and the Oregon Wolf Conservation and Management Plan, monitor the status and distribution of wolves in Oregon, in addition to education, outreach, and wolf depredation related incidents and investigations. With regards to the Oregon State Police Enforcement, this division of OSP enforces fish, wildlife, and commercial fishing laws to protect natural resources, and general fund is used to fund anti-poaching encroachment, which this fund will now cover. It helps provide the needed administration with regards to the leadership administration of fish and wildlife programs. It helps represent the department on the governor's natural resource cabinet through the Oregon legislative process and with other resource and federal agencies. It helps coordinate media relations, education initiatives, and efforts to recruit, retain, and be reactive to hunters and anglers. It also is intended to support the broad anti-poaching outreach and media campaign. It covers portions of the agency's state government services charges assessed by the Department of Administrative Services. It helps funding to pay for bond financing, as well as critical agency deferred maintenance projects and emergency repairs and maintenance for ODF&W state-funded hatcheries. Madam Chair, it also deals with funding options for ODF&W Habitat Division, which are critical. It establishes a division of administration position, support staff, and 5 additional regional habitat biologists, increasing resources dedicated to habitat protection, restoration, and enhancement, as well as dealing with additional regional habitat biologist positions in the field that will provide the critical capacity the department currently lacks to focus on habitat issues in each watershed. It also deals with habitat issues and focuses on including voluntary habitat projects on state and public land, collaboration, reviewing and permitting applications, and coordination on science and monitoring needs. And these new positions will evaluate issues related to habitat and provide coordination across ODF&W on common issues for both fish and wildlife habitat. It also deals with the habitat resource fund shifting, so that funding in the Habitat Resources Program in general, that has been in the general fund in the past, this will bring in ODF&W fund shifted programs to other funds and license dollars. It will help work performed by the Habitat Resources Program that provides a broad benefit for all Oregonians, and as habitats for all Oregon fish and wildlife species are addressed, and the program provides technical assistance to local, state, and federal agencies and private landowners regarding land use activities and proposed developments that affect fish and wildlife habitats. As far as basin water planning and mitigation coordination, Madam Chair and colleagues, those positions will ensure ODF&W ability to engage and develop solutions in ongoing and urgent water management issues in the state. And these positions would provide technical and information regarding fish and wildlife flow, temperature needs, and work with water users and agencies to develop solutions. As far as the Willamette Basin complex water issues, Madam Chair and colleagues, these positions will allow ODF&W to coordinate basin activities, provide technical analysis, develop in-stream flow targets, manage contested case processes. It will also allow funding for ODF&W to be complete for complete and necessary analytical tasks prior to full allocation of reservoir water, which is critical. And staff could undertake a significant stakeholder engagement and outreach program so that the public is kept apprised and they have input in plan changes in the reservoir. And then with Oregon Stream Restoration, funding enables to reestablish positions to ensure adequate capacity across the Western Oregon implementation of habitat restoration, which is critical to our fisheries. And this program staff provides technical assistance, consultation, and management and/or construction of services to a wide variety of stakeholders, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I will end with you don't see Republicans bringing tax bills very often as you and your tenure in this body, Madam Chair and colleagues. And the reason why I'm bringing this tax bill is because I believe that the wildlife of this state and the processes that I've outlined from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is critical to every Oregonian. And every Oregonian should have some skin in the game on how that is managed. And by providing this small income tax, and Mr. Allenack, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm doing numbers off the hip, but at 0.0013%, if an individual makes $50,000 a year, they're going to be roughly paying $65 a year in with this tax. Thank you, Mr. Allenack. Now, Madam Chair and colleagues, the majority of the department has been, you'll see in the in some testimony that I submitted in the breakout of the agency's budget, that the federal dollars come to the budget and fund, but they fund certain programs, and there's still matching dollars that are necessary for those programs. The second part of the tax is the tax credit, because so much of these departments' functionality has been funded by licensures. And what we found, and what you'll hear from in testimony from the department, is as those licensures increase, the number of licensures purchased decrease and have continued to decrease over time. And so by adding the fact that every Oregonian will now be responsible for the activities that I had mentioned earlier, Madam Chair, and then the licensure holders shouldn't have to pay twice, and therefore they would be getting a tax credit towards their new tax liability. So that individual that's paying $65 at $50,000 a year annual income, if they were to go buy a salmon tag and a crab license that costs, these aren't correct numbers, Madam Chair, but $75, they would only be eligible for $65 that year for that tax credit. So they're still contributing the $10. If they were to go buy a sports pack for $225 for tags and licensors, they would still only be eligible for that $65 credit. And so they're still contributing more. Normally, most individuals that buy licenses will be paying more than the $65 for the licenses, and therefore hunters and fishers are still contributing more than just their income tax that is to the programs that were outlined before, Madam Chair. And I just want to end with, again, it's critically important as we make decisions in this body, and the Fish and Wildlife Commission makes decisions within their body, that they have the data and science necessary to do so. And this bill will help fund the department in perpetuity, Madam Chair, and give them the resources to have that data and science collection to make those recommendations to this body and the Wildlife Commission for management of wildlife in this state for generations to come. Madam Chair, colleagues, thank you so much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative David Box-Smith, for a very thorough explanation. Would someone please turn off their audio? Great, thank you. Thank you very much for a really thorough explanation of not only how this proposal works, but the rationale behind it. Very helpful. Before I call on members for questions, I'd like to be sure we hear from the other legislator present in case that representative needs to be somewhere else. Can you stay on the line, though, with us in case there are questions?
Madam Chair, I have to go testify for another bill real quick, and then I will be right back.
Thank you. Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me and see me okay?
Yes, just fine.
Very good. Thank you. Ken Helm, House District 34. It's nice to be with you, and it's a pleasure for me to testify on this idea. Here's the reason that I am on the bill and supporting the general idea. In 2015, this legislature, or the legislature at that time, formed a task force to look into what was then a gaping hole in ODFW's budget. And not only was there a $32 million shortfall projected for the next biennium, but the problem was perceived to extend into future biennia. One of those biennia is the one that we're in now. And although it's really hard to predict the future, and ODFW's revenue outlook has changed somewhat in a sort of unanticipated twist of the COVID pandemic, more folks are going outside, more folks have returned to fishing and hunting as a pastime. But I'm fairly certain that as we get back to whatever we call normal, the long-term trends will continue, unfortunately. And that's a sadness for me, because I've tried to promote both fishing and hunting in the state, and all sorts of passive recreation too. What that task force did was to explore different mechanisms for providing a revenue stream to ODFW to make up for the lost license revenue that was anticipated to occur for many, many years in the future. And the task force upon which I sat came up with about 100 different ideas, some of them good, some of them not so good. Most of them, however, incapable on their own of making up that budget shortfall or taking care of what the department identified for us as a biennia over biennia need that would go unmet. That number hovered in the vicinity of about $90 million per biennia. And so we provided a couple of ideas to your predecessor committee and your predecessor chair, Madam Chair, along the lines of how we could fill that gap. One was an income tax surcharge. The other was a small additional tax on beverage containers. Those two ideas had the robustness to provide the amount of tax revenue that the department needed. But your predecessor, Madam Chair, thought both of these ideas were horrible ideas. And so they did not move forward in the process, even though a group of stakeholders that was very diverse recommended them. Since that time, I've occupied myself in a couple of different ways to try to support the department's work and support its budgets in the ordinary way. And it's intriguing to me to see an idea that does exactly what the task force was asked to do in a slightly different way. I think Representative Brock Smith described to you just now the full breadth of what the department does currently. And I think this bill seeks to support what they do into the future, and that's a good thing. So generally, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I support the bill because the bill would support the department as we know it now. There are two additional reasons that I become involved in the bill, and they're represented in the -2 amendment. We've done a couple of things since 2015, which are really good ideas. One is we've created an Office of Outdoor Recreation, That was established, and Kaylin O'Brien Feeney fills that position now. It keeps us competitive with other states in the West who also have an office or an officer of outdoor recreation. And the job of that position or office is to make sure that states are competing for tourist dollars and attracting appropriate recreation into the state to feed the economy and to have people enjoy those states for the outdoor opportunities that exist. The other thing that we did as a legislature is we created the Oregon Conservation and Recreation Fund. That fund was meant primarily to fill a shortfall, at least in a small way, of the non-game animal management in the state. Back in the 90s, before the department was eviscerated, we had a habitat division. It had 10 to 15 biologists, and our non-game animals were pretty well managed. Due to changes in the 90s and a reduction in ODFW's budget, that division has gone away, and it's never and the department has never been able to repopulate it. The Oregon Conservation and Recreation Fund does a small piece of returning the department to that work in that the fund and its advisory committee is tasked with bringing forward projects that can receive grant dollars that help non-game species in the state. And when we do that, we help both recreational users who, when they are hiking or boating or otherwise recreating in Oregon, we love to see wildlife, right? We love to see wild birds. We love to see wild animals. We love to even see the insects that we might encounter along the way. That fund helps projects that make those species management possible. So in the amendment, I've taken the advantage to funding those, to being specific, because when the COVID pandemic hit, the funding for both of those purposes last year was swept out of state need. And we haven't been able to restore that funding quite yet. And so whenever I see an opportunity to hop on the bandwagon, particularly when one of our Republican colleagues is proposing a tax, I've done so. I'm quite unapologetic, particularly with these two items. And so that describes why I'm part of this bill. It's an intriguing idea. I know that you will have a lot of commentary from folks as you go along, both on the issue of whether this money is needed and, of course, how the department is managed. And there'll be quibbles about that, I think, that you'll hear. But I do agree with Representative Brocksmith on this. Our wildlife is critically important to the state. It's critically important to people who live here. And it's critically important for us to recover our tourist economy. And so I feel that we need to do what we can to promote that. And I'm sort of the opinion that if we have the opportunity to discreetly and in a surgical way get the money that the department needs, then we should, and we should continue conversations about how the department is managed through our ordinary means. Thanks for allowing me to speak today, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I wish you luck in your analysis of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee members, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Brocksmith, if you're there, and Representative Helm for bringing this bill forward and highlighting this deficit in the department. Either one of you can answer. I just have a few questions, and one is just to help me understand a little bit better the problem is how much of the budget of ODF&W is license-based versus general fund / federal dollar matching? And just a rough estimate, if you have that.
Madam Chair, I can take a swing at that if you like.
Sure.
and I'm going to get this part wrong, but it's about half and half.
Okay.
And so federal funds and other funds are about half, and license revenue has been about half. And those federal funds have been fairly stable, as I've understood it, over time. It's the license fund component of the budget that, of course, goes up and down.
Okay. Thank you. And just one more follow-up, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Thank you. So in your testimony, I think it was Representative Helm, it was that it seems like the licensing part of the budget has been declining over time. But then there's been this spike during COVID because more people are getting out, I think you said. So I'm trying to reconcile the kind of that difference where we're at. Are we on an upward trend because of COVID? And do you think it's going to go back down? Or can you explain that just a little bit further?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Rep. Reschke. I think you're going to have folks from ODFW that can zero in more on this. It's just in my other dealings with the department, I've received anecdotal information that indicates that there's just a lot more people out there. That's good news, of course.
Yeah.
But as we return to normal, I would anticipate folks will return to their, you know, largely indoor lifestyle. And if we make the assumption that the levels of participation in hunting and fishing are going to remain, I think we could be caught flat-footed again.
Thank you, Rep. Helm, and thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the answers.
Representative Levy.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So I have to say that I didn't prepare for this meeting as well as I should have, because I was actually chair of ODF&W when House Bill 2402 was passed and the task force was formed. And so I have a little bit of background in this issue. I do know that the general fund, when ODF&W comes and asks for general funding, more than likely quite a bit of the stuff that they ask for is not given, especially like if you talk about the wolf depredation program. That's an expensive program that needs to be funded. But there's some other programs, the Oregon Outdoor Recreation Fund. That was one of my favorite programs when I was with ODF&W on the commission. And they're also, so you might know this, Representative Helm, that I'm also doing a work group on elk depredation, and that they have a problem with the funding for taking care of the great mounts and numbers of elk that are part of our state. So tell me, in this bill, is this going to completely eliminate the problem for general fund asks on a regular basis? Or are we going to see them come before us again for more if we do this taxing basis instead of the, you know, their POPs and all that other stuff that they ask for through funding operations? If we do the taxing base, are we going to be coming back again and asking for more taxing later on?
So, Mr. Rep. Helm, I'm back if you want me to.
Okay. Well, why don't we tag team then? And I appreciate the question, Rep. Levy. I'm supposed to be in judiciary right now, so I'll hand it off to you're in good hands. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to speak. Thanks.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, colleagues, Rep. Levy, for the question, and the agencies on the line here as well. But no, the intent of this bill is to fund the department, the task force recommendations for 15, in perpetuity. Not only will it increase, is it insulated from needing, you know, POPs, unless you have other legislation that's going to add new programs to the department that will need revenue resources. This fully funds the department and if they're POPs, if you will. It does so in a way with the income tax that that also has a very tiny, and Mr. Allen, I can talk about that in much more greater detail, but a very tiny inflationary language for a CPI increase. And so, like we have seen with the revenue.
Can you explain to those who don't know what CPI is, what it is?
Go ahead, Mr. Allenack.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office. CPI stands for Consumer Price Index. It's basically inflation.
Thank you.
Sorry for interrupting.
Oh, not at all. And so, but it's a very small amount. But as we've seen through COVID and the pandemic, the revenues from income taxes for the state have continued to increase. And so even so, by moving this department off into a into its own fund, in its own a tax structure, it will be insulated from not only the future cuts, as we've seen in cut budgets where the governor has come through and said, okay, we need to cut 7%, you know, from everyone's budget. This will be somewhat insulated from those cuts, but it will also, as we've seen, have those income tax increases. So as it's a 0.0013% over time, it will in. As the income taxes continue to increase, as our state grows, those resources will continue to increase for the department to deal with not only inflation, but future programs.
Chair, are you okay if I ask another question?
Yes, and after.
Uh-oh. I think she froze.
So I don't know if this is Chris. I don't know if we need Rep. Reschke or Rep. Pham. Rep. Reschke, if you want to, just until the chair gets back.
Yeah, I think I'll go ahead and do that if that's okay with Vice Chair Pham.
That sounds great.
Okay.
Okay, so you said that it wouldn't raise the taxes, correct? So if somebody's, you gave an example earlier, but if somebody's making $1 million a year, okay, and they're getting tax at this point 0013, and then that 0.0013 is it related to, is their taxable income? Okay, so if that 0.0013 is what I'm concerned about, is that going to be raised, or in this bill is that guaranteed that stays at that taxing rate?
That point, and that's what we were talking about, and Mr. Allenack can talk about this much better than I, but that 0.0013 will be increased by the CPI.
Okay.
Very smallly. So it'll be 0. And hop in anytime, Mr. Allenack, but it'll be 0.0013000 something. Three. Mr. Allenack.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think Kyle was reading the bill as well, so he may correct my recollection, but I believe it gets carried out to 4 decimal points.
Yeah.
Is this per biennium?
I believe it was, the indexing is usually an annual indexing.
Okay. Thank you. I may have more questions, but I'll let somebody else do it.
Of course. And Rep. Levy, I appreciate your questions. And again, to your original question with regards to those POPs and so forth, these resources are meant so we don't have to take another bite at this apple. It's meant to insulate and fund the department, as I mentioned earlier in my testimony, for generations to come.
Representative Pham, your hand was up a few minutes ago. Do you still have a question?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Actually, I don't have a question anymore, so we can just skip me. And I apologize, I need to step out for 10 minutes to testify in House rules, but I will be back shortly.
We'll see you later. Thank you. Representative Smith. Greg Smith.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So I'm supportive of this concept, and I'm supportive of the good work that's being brought forward in a bipartisan manner. The one thing I want to point out, though, is because Oregon is an income tax state and revenues go up and revenues go down, we're not necessarily insulating the department. We're just providing additional revenue to assist. And so help me understand how this brings predictability since it's tied to the income tax.
Well, thank you, Representative Smith. Appreciate the question. I might not be the best to answer that question, as you have Kyle and Christopher that are in the room that deal with the ebbs and flows of the budget, as you are much more skilled at that yourself. The department has done a fantastic job on making sure that they have carryover funds to help insulate themselves with regards to ebbs and flows of the current resources that are allocated, so that they don't have shortfalls. And the department can speak better to that than I. In all of the, in historically, Representative, the income tax resources from the state, when I was working on this concept, have steadily increased every year. And those revenues, of course, have steadily increased every year. I'm saying that wrong, and I apologize, Representative. The taxable income in this state has increased steadily every year. Now, we've had recessions that have impacted those revenues for sure. Because that taxable income has been impacted. But for the most part, and on average, I believe, Representative, you know that the taxable income, that of course that we survive on that income tax, is at a steady increase. There will be few things that will help insulate anyone from a huge recession that, you know, similar to 2008 or greater, especially as an income tax resource state. But on average, and for the most part, those taxable incomes increase annually.
Madam Chair, if I can follow up.
Sure. And I also want to, this is just a time check. I want to let the committee know that we have 5 more people signed up to testify, and one of those is someone representing ODFW, and that person may also be able to answer some questions if they're not answered right now. Representative Smith, please do go ahead.
Yeah, perfect. And again, I want to be clear, I'm really supportive of this concept. One of the things that we may want to look at, knowing that the income tax fluctuates and capital gains fluctuate, the stock market fluctuates, is perhaps we could manage those ebbs and flows by also requiring a certain amount of ending fund balance be maintained through the Ways and Means process. So that way, when the ebbs and flows do occur, we have the cash flow available to keep the department whole. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that is a fantastic suggestion, and I look forward to working with you on an amendment, if so, if the body committee chooses. I would like to hear from the department themselves, because I believe they are, as I mentioned earlier, working on those efforts, but I'm very open to having that discussion and at your recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Does that complete the questions for Representatives David Brock Smith and Ken Helm, at least for this time? We can move on then to the rest of the witness list. The next witness will be Ms. Shannon Hearn from ODFW. That will be followed by Sean Cleave, John Calhoun, Scott Bruin, and Greg Costello. So Shannon Hearn is next.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Shannon Hearn. I'm the Deputy Director for Fish and Wildlife Programs at the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The department appreciates the opportunity to discuss House Bill 3328 with you today. The department does support House Bill 3328. As was mentioned, the development of House Bill 3328 was based on recommendations made by the Task Force on Funding for Fish, Wildlife, and Related Outdoor Recreation and Education. This task force explored sources of funding for connecting Oregonians with the outdoors and conserving Oregon's wildlife. One of those recommendations was an income tax. When I reference wildlife, I just want you to note, by legal definition, that includes mammals, avian species, fish, shellfish, et cetera. So currently funding for wildlife conservation is derived from the sale of licenses, tags, and permits to harvest wildlife. Federal excise taxes on angling and hunting equipment also contribute, and dedicated limited federal funding is available for species recovery or enhancements for angling or hunting opportunities. These funding sources support what we call the North American model of conservation. This model has been successful in supporting the management and recovery of many game species, but it's not sufficient to cover the research and inventory of more than 850 wildlife species in Oregon. House Bill 3328 would potentially generate close to $160 million biannually. For perspective, the agency's 1921 budget is a little over $390 million in total funds. The funds generated by House Bill 3328 are intended to replace close to $36 million in general fund currently provided to ODFW, which is about 9% of our total budget, and replace both the general fund and other funds paid to the Oregon State Police for enforcement of Oregon's wildlife laws. House Bill 3328 additionally contributes $500,000 annually to the Office of Outdoor Recreation, which we are closely aligned with. But the Office of Outdoor Recreation is seated in the Oregon Parks Department. The remaining funding would be used to implement the state's species action plans, the Oregon Conservation Strategy, and the Nearshore Strategy. It would increase funding for science, research, and monitoring for all species, and provide a grant source for partnership-based conservation and recreation enhancements. Currently, this grant source is provided through the Oregon Conservation and Recreation Fund, which was previously mentioned, and this fund is overseen by the Oregon Conservation and Recreation Advisory Committee. Enhancements of existing programs can benefit all Oregonians. A few examples of that would be further investments in the Salmon Trout Enhancement Program, which currently supports thousands of hours of volunteerism and conducts classroom education on salmon life cycle in many schools across the state. It would also contribute an increased investment in research and monitoring for aquatic dependent species, which would improve information on water quality for all Oregonians. Additionally, enhanced funding could advance community science initiatives for small mammal and avian inventories, which engage more people in understanding our state's wildlife. So funding generated by House Bill 3328 can also be used to expand the agency's focus on protecting and enhancing habitat. As was also previously mentioned, the reestablishment of a habitat division, and also further investments in conducting extensive mapping of wildlife habitat and movement of wildlife in the state. And we see a lot of our native wildlife moving further north to address impacts or influences from climate change. In Oregon, there has been a broad support to find alternative funding sources for conservation of all wildlife, to enhance equitable access and experience in Oregon's outdoors, and to ensure that Oregon is investing in ecosystem level resiliency in the face of climate change impacts. Over 70 partner organizations and thousands of individual contributions have supported the private fundraising campaign for the Oregon Conservation and Recreation Fund. As a side note, Congress has introduced the Recovering Americans Wildlife Act in the last three sessions. This act recognizes this need for proactively investing in addressing the needs of all wildlife and to prevent at-risk species from becoming threatened or endangered. If passed, House Bill 3328 could provide a way to ensure that Oregon receives the full allocation of RAWA funds, Recovering America's Wildlife Act, because it would be a new source of non-federal match. Last, I'd like to point out that I do have written testimony. I've included in that testimony several links to the information sources I referenced. There's a link to the task force, the Oregon Conservation Strategy and Nearshore Strategy, Oregon's habitat mapping tool called Compass, the Oregon Conservation and Recreation Fund, key threats to species, et cetera. So that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear, and I don't see any questions for the agency. Okay, next we'll hear from Sean Cleave. Sorry, Mr. Cleave, I'd like to call on Representative Levy first.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, Shannon, nice to see you again. One question that I have, and I'm going to go back to my favorite subject in the world, is wolf depredation issues. And they're always underfunded when it comes to replacing the cost for farmers and ranchers who are affected by their cattle. So because Representative Smith, Brock Smith, brought up the issue of the wolf fund, do you have any idea how this will affect that funding basis through this taxing? Will that allow there to be more money, since you won't be coming to the general fund or to the legislature saying we need more money to fund the wolf depredation program?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Levy, thank you for the question. I will say, Representative Levy, you like to start with a complex one. You know it well. The way currently the wolf plan works, and our management in cooperation with Oregon Department of Ag and the Wolf Compensation Program relates, is just in the last session, the legislature provided, and I can't remember the millions off, but they provided enough funding for three positions that would work on the ground to look at non-lethal preventive measures for wolves, and they would also conduct the depredation investigations, and potentially, if you move in that direction, the lethal removal of a wolf or wolves as needed. And so that directly relates to the ODA's wolf compensation program, in that we are the entity that's charged with determining if wolves were the cause of the loss that compensation program's for. So currently right now in our budget, we don't have that avenue of funding for the compensation program directly. We're just linked through it with our staff resources. You know, our legislatively approved budget would have all of these components if you add this funding source in, and the legislature certainly could look at changing that.
And this would then take away more general fund ask for that part of the program. Okay. Thank you very much, Shannon. Thank you, Chair.
Of course. Sean Cleave.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Cleave, representing the Taxpayers Association of Oregon. It's certainly my certainly my pleasure to be here today and to see you all. I want to first start out by recognizing Representative Brock Smith's heroic work addressing some of the policies that the Assembly is going to continue to wrestle with regarding funding for ODF&W. I'm not going to belabor the reasons for that. Frankly, this committee is lucky to have Representative Levy on the committee. There's probably between the proponents of the bill and this committee an incredible wealth of knowledge regarding the problems that the department is facing. For the record, though, the Taxpayers Association of Oregon is opposing the legislation. 2 years ago, in the last long session, we passed $3.1 billion in new taxes and over 500 fee increases. Oregon is also ranked the fifth biggest state in spending per capita by the National Association of State Budget Officers. And based on my quick research, there are 44 other states that do provide some general fund backfill for their departments of fish and wildlife. For these reasons, we would absolutely encourage you to look at other existing funding resources. Specifically, I think one that comes to mind is the lodging tax. That was a tax that was passed in order to assist with tourism. And I can absolutely see a nexus between the purpose of that existing tax and some of the programs that Mr. Brock Smith so eloquently illustrated in his testimony. And with that, Madam Chair, I will end my testimony and provide time if you have any questions.
Thank you. I'm not seeing a hand go up right now, but if you can stay around, there may be a question later.
Happy to.
Thank you. And next is John Calhoun, and that will be followed by Scott Bruin.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the committee. My name is John Calhoun, and I'm here today representing Tax Fairness Oregon, a network of volunteers who support a rational and equitable tax code. I will be very brief. HB 3328 would create an additional to the state personal income tax and dedicate the funds collected to wildlife and outdoor funds. We support the concerns of the proponents and the benefits of secured spending as laid out by Representative Brock Smith. Regardless of the worthiness of the request for increased and more stable funding for wildlife protection, conservation, and outdoor recreation, this bill sets a dangerous precedent. This is allowed to pass every agency in the state that has legislators who support that agency will also try to carve out a permanent income tax targeted to support that agency. Spending priorities are the domain of the Ways and Means Committee and the entire legislature and should stay there. Priorities change over time. The legislature as a whole should be able to respond to changes. In addition, this bill gives a tax credit against the tax increase for the purchase of tags and licenses pursuant to wildlife laws. So the broader public would now subsidize the activities of a few. We urge you to let this bill die in committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And I would ask you and any of the remaining speakers to stick around in case a question comes up, if you can. Next is Scott Bruin.
Great. Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair, Committee. My name is Scott Bruin. I'm the Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is the state's largest business trade association. We have approximately 1,600 members who employ about 330,000 Oregonians. Thank you for this opportunity. We oppose House Bill 3328. Now, let me say that we certainly do support wildlife and habitat conservation, and we salute people who purchase hunting and fishing licenses and tags every year because they are the true financial pillars of wildlife and habitat conservation in our state. But we oppose House Bill 3328 because it would create an additional income tax to support an individual fund within an individual agency. We believe this sets a very bad precedent for Oregon tax policy. To start, there are some significant structural and fairness challenges with the bill. First, there's not a withholding element, so it would have the effect of a hidden tax. People are going to be surprised when they do their taxes and realize they owe another 100, 200, or even 500 bucks. It is bound to create anger and confusion, as well as additional compliance burdens. Second, it gives a nod of sorts to folks who purchase hunting and fishing licenses by giving them a credit for those costs against their personal tax obligations. But the credit sunsets after 6 years. Maybe the credit will be reinstated at that point, maybe it won't. Who knows what a future legislature will do? But what we do know is that we will have a permanent new income tax on the books. Structural and fairness issues notwithstanding, we would note, as we have on other occasions, that many Oregonians are already seeing tax increases. Oregon businesses, including those taxed through personal income taxes like S corporations, will see a 41% increase in their overall tax burden between 2019 and 2022. Creating another new tax in light of the already increasing tax burden and in light of the economic challenges caused by COVID is not, we believe, good policy for the state. We would also know that state coffers, based on the March revenue forecast, are doing well and much better than anticipated. We know that the State Wildlife Fund is not primarily funded by the general fund, but we would respectfully request that if additional funding for the State Wildlife Fund is deemed a priority, then policymakers look to find and consider a general fund solution. For all these reasons, Madam Chair and Committee, especially given the standalone new tax precedent would set, OBI opposes House Bill 3328. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And the next speaker is Greg Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Greg Costello. I'm the Conservation Director of the Wildlands Network, a nonprofit organization that works to protect biodiversity across North America. We've worked directly in Oregon, had the pleasure of working with Representative Elm and Representative Marsh on the 2019 Wildlife Corridors Act, which was passed by close to unanimous support in both the House and the Senate and then signed into law. One of the things that act did was require the Department of Fish and Wildlife to do a habitat connectivity plan for the state. Unfortunately, there was no dedicated funding for that. And 2 years later, the state is still hampered by a lack of funding and has not been able to complete that plan. In part to address that, we began working with Representative Helm and the department in 2020 on the OCRF fund, helping them as a nonprofit agency raise money for the department, which is a rather unusual role for a nonprofit conservation group. But it highlights the lack of support and funding for particularly the conservation side of ODFW. We support House Bill 2833 because of this dedicated and increased funding. This is a national problem. We are working with states across the country on this issue. It's not Oregon exclusive. And the problem with general funding is conservation, particularly non-game species, always lose out when there's a crunch. They lose out to education. They lose out to other more, what are perceived as more immediate needs. Nevertheless, we know, and it's been highlighted during this pandemic, that wildlife and outdoor spaces, wild places, contribute to the mental health of our citizens. They decrease depression. They provide resilience against pandemics and disease. And most importantly, just like clean water and clean air, healthy biodiversity is essential to our human welfare. So for these reasons, we support and commend Representative Smith for this effort to create a dedicated and increased fund. I would say that across this country, there have been few state legislatures with the courage or the conviction to address this through an income tax measure. The state of Georgia did a few years ago, but it was limited solely and through a sales tax to outdoor recreation gear. So this is a progressive attempt by Representative Smith and the state legislature, which would keep it, frankly, at the forefront of conservation and conservation for wildlife across our great nation. And we would are happy to support this effort. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee members, do you have questions of any of the witnesses who are still with us in the room? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Not necessarily a question, but a comment. Those folks who spoke in opposition, it was interesting that I did not hear one of them mention that there would also be a reduction now in licensing to offset a portion of the income tax. And I wonder if anyone has any thoughts on that.
Thank you. I will ask, this is a question that can be addressed by any of the witnesses. And Mr. Costello, it looks like your mic is still on. If when you're not speaking, could you please mute it? Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Representative Brock-Smith.
Yes.
I'm happy to attempt to answer the question, and I know the department. So, Representative Smith, this is something that we discussed quite a bit in the formation of this legislation to make sure that we got the number right. And Shannon will, Deputy Director Hearn will correct me if I'm wrong, because the licensure program brings in, I want to say it's roughly $75 million annually, $77 million annually. And so knowing that we're giving the tax credit, those resources, and that potentially those resources could be credited fully or 100%, there is the resources there in the income tax to cover those costs, to keep the budget or the ask whole. Does that make sense?
It does, and thank you very much. And Madam Chair, I'll just let my question go. Thank you.
Any other questions? While you're thinking about whether you have questions, there's bit of jargon that came up a few times during our discussion this afternoon. Several people referred to POPs, and for anyone who's listening who doesn't know that, it's sort of legislative jargon. And Representative Smith, I see you. both of us with experience on Ways and Means. A POP is a policy option package that's offered by an agency. It's a description of something they would like to do, and it involves a request for money. So a POP is a policy option package, but basically it's an idea about here's something we'd like to do. It will cost some money because we need to buy a piece of equipment, or we need to buy some new software, or we need to add 3 or 30 new staff people to develop a program and then implement the program. So that if you heard about POPs, that's what it's talking about. My concerns started with some of the references to insulating a department. And then as I was listening to other speakers describe what is really, even though we're a revenue committee, this the genesis of this idea is a budgeting problem. So it's trying to solve an inadequate budget through a new revenue source. And I found myself thinking, well, why shouldn't there be a new dedicated tax for any number of other purposes? There are a lot of departments that routinely go through cut scenarios. Well, if we have to reduce the budget by 5%, how are you, agency X, Y, or Z, going to reduce your budget by that percent? And some of us who've been here for a while have lived through those budget reduction not only exercises, but where we had to adopt reduced budgets and saw reductions in programs serving Oregonians. So it is a very interesting, it's an interesting thing to consider whether a legislature will want to start carving out individual programs and having dedicated revenue sources. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about now for quite a while. We do have a little while longer in this hearing. We have no other witnesses to speak that I am aware of. Manny, did anyone else sign up after I saw the list shortly before the meeting?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, that completes our list of witnesses. Committee, we do still have time if you would like to have some additional conversation. Committee members? Representative Brock Smith, is there something you wanted to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate your comments sincerely. This is unique in the fact that we're carving out a budget. Well, in essence, we're carving out a department to be funded by an income tax. Income taxes, of course, as you know, Madam Chair, fund a lot of departments in the state. I think what's unique here, and was one of the impetuses in me putting this concept forward, Madam Chair and colleagues, is the licensures are what is funding a lot of what this department does, and especially when it comes to matching grants for programs from the funding that's coming from the feds. The resources from the general fund to fund this department, like I said, this funding would save roughly just shy of $90 million a biennium. And so it's the licensure programs that are funding this department. And the problem is, we can't keep on increasing licensure programs and expect this department to stay whole, because we're just going to have to be continuing to increase the general fund to fund all of the programs that I've services that this agency provides. But we all know that that's a difficult task too, as you mentioned, Madam Chair. But as I'm on the Energy and Environment Committee and the Ag and Natural Resources Committee, and on the Ways and Means Sub for Natural Resources. And there's so many issues that this department deals with regards to our salmonid populations alone. And those fisheries are critically important to the state. But those licensure programs that fund this department are voluntary. It's not like a gas tax that, of course, then helps fund roads. People have to buy gasoline. It's not like a privilege tax, if you will, that funds EVs or, you know, EV transition rebates and so forth, that this committee, of course, is very aware of. These are voluntary licensure purchases. And at the end of the day, we're a generation away of those increased licensures and not having those resources, because they continue to dwindle in the general fund obligation to maintain the programs. Will continue to increase. And so I hope, Madam Chair and colleagues, we think about that uniqueness of this department in relation to, you know, having a department solely funded through an income tax, and of course licensures and other, because not all licensures are going to be credited back. And so these resources, again, are so critical for all of the things that you've heard, and for the future of wildlife and conservation efforts in the state.
Thank you, Representative Brock Smith. I have a question now for Shannon Hearn. I think you're still in the room with us.
Chair Nathanson, I'm here.
Thank you. In addition to all of the rationale that we've been hearing from the bill sponsors and other supporters, I do want to ask just a few more questions about licenses and permits. What can you share with us about the number of licenses as a percentage of the population? Is it a declining share of the population? or a more level or static share of the population that is purchasing licenses or permits? Because as the population grows, I'm just trying to anticipate, what do these numbers mean?
Chair Nathanson, thank you for the question. Well, let's start with, I mean, there's two ways to answer this. One is the number of products we sell, which is about a million different licenses, permits, endorsements, or products to harvest in some way. The other one is the number of anglers and hunters or shellfish harvesters or trappers that we have. So, you know, we sell close to a million products, but when you look at anglers, we have about 600,000, and hunters, we're a little under 400,000. So if you compare that to a population of 4 million, yeah, a quarter of the population is participating in these activities as a roundabout number. I think it's been stated before, we have seen a decline in hunters and anglers over time. The one growing segment of our population is women hunting and angling. But for the most part, we've seen a slow decline. COVID and the lack of ability to go into indoor spaces and other entertainment venues really did lead to this resurgence of people looking to the outdoors, potentially buying, you know, a trout license to go into the field with their family. You know, it's relatively inexpensive for kids. It's $10 for an annual hunting and fishing license, which includes shellfish too, if they want to go clamming or crabbing later on. And then the parents have to buy their license. So it was a reasonable entertainment avenue. We're looking at how to build upon that. We're actually doing surveys through our information and education division to see, you know, if we can't capitalize on that. There always has been this interest in the use of the outdoors, especially knowing where your food comes from and obtaining healthy proteins and things like that. Overall, we have about $200 million in license revenue. Some of that is dedicated, but most of that goes into positions on the ground that have to actually look at the impact of the harvest on those species in order to maintain them. Salmon was already brought up. We have some listed species in salmon, so it takes some intensive monitoring in order to operate those fisheries. And by the time you spread those license dollars out across the game species, which, if I'm remembering correctly, is about 80, that doesn't leave a lot for the rest of the species that aren't harvested, except for maybe by some of our tribal entities. But for most part, non-tribal Oregonians don't harvest them. Connectivity is a good example that was brought up of this. So we have a bunch of research and monitoring related to ungulates, elk, deer, pronghorn, things like that moving across the landscape. We don't have much data because we can't spread the license dollars that way or even the federal funding that way because they're not game species. For reptiles, insects, some small mammals, et cetera. So when we did the connectivity study, we did have to look at alternative funding sources. And so we've used a little bit of license dollars in there, but we've gone for grants to basically look at 47 different species, that most of them non-game, and how they move across the landscape so that we can better address issues of road maintenance and where climate change is going to lead us with other, you know, with animals seeking different habitats because things just are not very friendly in their current environment. So hopefully that got at some of your question.
Yes. Bottom line, are the numbers of products, licenses and permits and so forth, is it the number that is declining as well as the percent of population? Or is it just as a percent of the population is declining?
So, Chair Nathanson, the number of participants is declining. We, okay, of course, have adjusted fees so that the revenue hasn't always declined in the same way, but it is the number of participants.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Hearn, real quick, I see on the witness list that you're listed as neutral, and yet I think I heard you be a proponent or supported the bill, and I just wanted to get clarification where the department was on this.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, thank you for that question. You're right, we did sign up as we were required to by the deadline, and at that time we did not have permission to support the bill, so I signed up as neutral. We do now have permission to support the bill.
Thank you.
Representative Levy, I think I saw your hand up a while ago and then it was down. Did you have a question?
I did, but I actually think that Shannon has already answered it. I know from my 8 years with the commission that their marketing plan, they have a great marketing plan. The problem is that you have people that want them to offer 1957 prices for their hunting and fishing licenses. They don't want to pay realistic fees because they look at other states and see what other states are offering. And the states that they look at are usually like the Midwestern states where their median income is a lot less than our median income, and they expect us to want to, you know, they expect Oregon to follow suit with them. As I recall, I mean, Shannon, if that's changed, you can let me know. I'm still ambivalent about this bill because I'm very concerned about us taxing at the depredation of my marriage if I were to vote for this. Being that we're hunters and fishers in our family, you know, and they think they pay their fair share of all this stuff. But, you know, am I right in that? Is it still the same? Because I still have people who think I'm on the commission and they call me up and they say, why do we have to pay these hunting fees? You know, because they don't want the department to raise it.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Levy, you are correct. The Alternative Task Force did look at what other states do. And when you look at the Midwest, there is a lower personal income there, but there's also, most of those states have a sales tax. And California and Washington, which often we get compared to across state agencies, they additionally have a sales tax. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of their conservation dollars for non-game species come from that sales tax. And it's, we're unique in how we fund our state agency, mainly on license dollars. A lot of other states have some other funding source that's much more bulkier than we do to add for conservation. But they are still struggling. It's a tough problem to solve, so I appreciate you guys taking up this bill.
Chair, may I say one more thing?
Sure.
I do know Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's Oregon Conservation Plan is the number one in the nation, and all other states mimic it. They were the first one to come out in it, and it was, I believe it was when I first got on the commission that it was made public, nationally public, and it won awards all over the United States for their conservation plan. I know they take it seriously, but yeah, I have a hard time thinking how we can make this work. We'll have to think about it. How long do we have?
There's something I'd like to ask of Legislative Revenue Office. It's really also like a Legislative Fiscal Office question. What I'm thinking about is other agencies are not exactly comparable to this natural resource agency, but there are other agencies that do collect money in licenses and fees. And I'm just wondering if there is a chart available that you could share with us at some time in the future showing how this agency's revenue mix is different, how it's similar and different from some other agencies in the proportion of money, basically in its reliance on licenses and permits and the like, versus its other agencies. You know, licenses, federal funds, general fund. And anything you have to share right now is fine, but I don't expect you to have an analysis off the top of your head.
Sure, Madam Chair. There are a number of agencies that do collect fees. Parks and Rec comes to mind. I've been working on an issue with them. So that's another agency. In terms of readily available information, you're again correct. It's more of an LFO thing than an LRO thing. I can send everybody on the committee a link to the LFO summaries, and they have a budget highlight summary document that shows federal, by agency, federal funds, general fund, other funds, and lottery funds, and that gives some sense for those. I mean, all of these fees would be a piece of other funds. Unfortunately, other funds itself is a broad variety of things. Another document I can make sure the committee gets is an actual other funds forecast produced by the Office of Economic Analysis. This one doesn't have the profile that their quarterly forecast does, but this is one that they produce every 6 months. They've started reproducing that, so I'll have to dig up the most recent one, and that provides some information by agency and where those funds come from. And I think it includes licenses and fees. There's kind of a potpourri source of funds there. So we have a couple of documents that are readily available. I don't have them at my fingertips right now, but we can get those to you as at least a starting point to provide some additional information.
Thank you. Committee, are there any other questions or comments before we adjourn this public hearing? I'm going to make sure I'm not missing anyone. Representative Brock Smith, I'm not taking any more public testimony. But is there something that needs to be corrected?
Just want to thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for the time.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Marsh.
Thank you. I do want to applaud the folks who came forward to talk to us about this proposal, Rep. Brock Smith, Rep. Helm. While I think we need to have a much broader conversation, I really appreciate the reality check offered in this conversation. The fact is that we have agencies that simply don't have adequate funding to move forward and to do their carry out their core responsibilities. I suspect that it's not limited to ODFW. So it's good to be reminded that we need to sometimes think outside our comfort zones to find solutions. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Rep. Marsh, for the comment. Anything else before I close this public hearing? I'm not saying anything. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3328. Mr. Alanak, any observations or information before we adjourn the meeting?
No, Madam Chair. I think that was a good discussion today.
Okay. Our business is done. We're adjourned.